LEX 18 presents a podcast with hot takes, hot topics, with your hosts, Megan Mannering and Evelyn Schultz. This is Hot Mike.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Hot Mike here at LEX 18.
We say this every week, but we have really leveled up this time.
I think so.
We see this woman on the airwaves pretty often, but we're going to peel back the curtain a little bit today and get to know her better. Please welcome to Hot Mike your Lieutenant Governor, Jacqueline Coleman.
Hello.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for making the time for us. We're excited to have you.
It was kind of funny. It felt yesterday around the newsroom a little bit like having your relatives over for a holiday, because it was like, is everything clean? We got to get the Christmas tree up.
We got a new plant.
We brought in the plant. So thank you for that.
I really appreciate that.
I think it was some good incentive to get some stuff done around here. Yeah. Well, thank you for being here. The mic is hot, but we promise we won't ask you anything too crazy.
Okay.
So to kind of get into it, Lieutenant Governor, let's start from the beginning. Where did you grow up? Paint the picture for us.
Okay. So I grew up in the sprawling metropolis of Bergen, Kentucky, which is about 30 minutes south of Lexington. So for those who know, it's close to Danville. That's kind of like a good point. But it's a tiny little town with we have about 1,000 people and a four-way stop. And that's it. And I was still living in Mercer County, actually, when the governor asked me to run with him. So I've been in rural central Kentucky my whole life. Graduated from Mercer County High School, went on to Center College, and played basketball there. When I graduated from there, I went on to the University of Louisville to get a master's degree in political science. And I also worked on the women's basketball team at U of L. And then I became a teacher, and I started kind of full circle back in Bergen. Was my first teaching job. I was a high school social studies teacher, girls basketball coach, and I spent most of my career at East Jessamine High School, which is, of course, right outside of Lexington. I think it's kind of like growing into each other, you know, Jessamine and Mercer and Fayette counties. Became an assistant principal at Nelson County High School, and that's when this guy named Andy Beshear called and asked if I wanted to be his running mate. So I spent my whole life in rural central Kentucky and in the classroom and on the basketball court.
When you were a child, you know, if someone had said to you as a kid, and when you were studying education in college maybe, and maybe even early on as a teacher, if someone had said, you're going to have a future in state politics, what would you have said?
You know, so people now will tell me, oh, I always knew that's what you were going to do. I never knew that's what I was going to do. No. So like to other people, they're not as surprised as I am, I think, which is interesting. Yeah.
What was it like growing up in such a small town, the four-way stop? That had to have been kind of a unique upbringing.
It really was. It was just a great little town. It's one of those, it's like I was saying, small towns, you know all your neighbors and your neighbors know all your business. So there's give and take there. But it's a great little town, and Mercer County was a great place to grow up. And then to go to college kind of in the county right next door, and to teach then in Jessamine County. I guess I got a little bit bigger as I went on, you know, in the towns, but you know, you grow up around friends and family, and there are people I still talk to and keep in touch with today. And so I'm very lucky to have been able to grow up in a place like that.
When you first got the call from Governor Beshear wanting to work together, have you be his running mate, what were you thinking?
Okay. So this is a great story. So we knew each other just because circles are small, you know, and so he called one day and said, hey, are you coming to the Capitol? Do you want to go grab a cup of coffee? And I said, well, I can't today, but I'll let you know when I'll be there. Mm-hmm. And that was like a normal thing. What was not normal was when he called me the next day and asked the same thing. And I'm like, what do you want? Like, why are you bothering me? What is going on? And so, my husband actually said, Jacqueline, he's going to run for governor and he's going to ask you to run with him. And I said, Chris, that is crazy. That's not what's happening. And so, the funny thing about it is when before we met, I was like, now I can only meet at this time because I have bus duty. So,
this is the most teacher thing I've ever heard.
And so I had to wait till the last bus left the parking lot before I could leave to go meet with him because I was the assistant principal at the time. And so I get there and he starts talking to me about it. And I, I guess my eyes kind of got big because he said that, you know, the first decision I have to make is who I want my running mate to be. And he was like, did you not think that's what we were talking about? And I said, Andy, I just left bus duty. No, that is not the conversation I thought we were going to have here. But that's how it started. It's got to be the only time in history that that conversation has started that way. Mm-hmm. But it did.
I'm sure you're relating to a lot of teachers right now who've been in your shoes. They've got 100 things on their mind. Mm-hmm. How has being in the classroom prepared you for your role as lieutenant governor?
So a lot of people think that it's that I have jumped from one world to another, mm-hmm. that are completely different. And I can see how, like, you would think that. But honestly, when we talk about the challenges that we face in Kentucky or the things that we're trying to get done, I think about the kids in my classroom, right? Because there's no challenge that we face in our community that you don't also face in the school, because schools are like microcosms mm-hmm. of your communities. And so it's really just, it makes it more personal to me because I don't see, you know, a spreadsheet or a statistic. I can, if you tell me a challenge, I can tell you the kid's name mm-hmm. and their family that mm-hmm. I met that were dealing with those things. And so I think it brings a little bit more of a personal touch to it. And it gives you a different understanding than maybe people who haven't worked with kids and mm-hmm. families mm-hmm. before. So I've tried to use that, and to never lose that, because I think that's so important when it comes to, you know, trying to figure out how you can help people.
Is there something that you miss about being in the classroom every day?
You know, teaching high school kids is not for the weak, but they really every day gave me an insight into mm-hmm. what was going on in the world or what they were hearing. And so I miss having that connection, you know, because as you talk to kids, you know, my goal was to teach kids how government was supposed to work and then what to do when it doesn't work for mm-hmm. you. And so just a lot of the conversations that we had in class or their feedback always kind of gave me an insight to what was being said in their household or what they were around when they weren't in my classroom. Mm-hmm. And I miss that connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's funny. I'm the product of two public school teachers, and it seems like high school teachers could say they could never teach elementary. Elementary teachers say they could never do middle school. Is there a grade level that you just don't think you could do?
Well, I was always scared of the little kids because, like, they can smell fear. You know, it's like kindergarten cough. Mm-hmm. The big kids, I could bluff them, and they, you know, they were fine. That was kind of my niche. But I think now that I have a 5-year-old, I feel like I might be able to do little kids. Mm-hmm. Maybe, mm-hmm. maybe. I don't know. But I don't think I could do middle school.
Middle school. Oh.
Well, and even remembering what it's like to be a middle schooler, that's such a hard time in everyone's life, mm-hmm. I think.
Right. I don't even want to go back to middle school.
No.
Right? So,
no.
But everybody has their niche and they fit it perfectly. And you can almost tell. That was my thing. I always like to guess in, like, big teachers' meetings. It's like, what grade do you teach? I can tell by the way that you act and talk and carry yourself. And we just all have our place.
If Governor Beshear were to teach a grade, where would you place him?
That's a good question.
What grade level is he giving?
Senior calculus.
Oh, calculus. I was just telling someone how bad I was at calculus.
Really? Wow. What makes you say that?
I just think he's really smart. So he would be like that calculus teacher.
Okay.
He'd be like the cool teacher that, like, during study hall, kids are, like, eating their lunch in there and hanging out. Would he be cool or would he?
I think he would definitely have his demographic.
Okay.
We all have our little,
that's a nice way to put it.
Yes. We all have, there's always kids that kind of migrate towards different teachers. And so you mm-hmm. end up having your own little crew. So I don't think we would have the same crew.
Wow. Hey, you need all students need a teacher to go to, right?
That's right.
Play that role in their life. And you mentioned your 5-year-old daughter. Mm-hmm. I believe she and I share a name.
You do.
Yes.
Her name's Evelyn too.
Would you call her, does she go have a nickname that she goes by?
Sometimes Ev or Evie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just like me.
Yeah.
Just
like
that's
you.
So funny.
Yeah.
Has having a young child like that given you a new perspective on,
absolutely.
On leadership and politics?
Absolutely. It's, you know, it's interesting when I'm trying to, like, correct her or help her understand how to teach, how to treat other people. Mm-hmm. I just go back to, like, oh, there's some adults that need some, you know, reminders of this. So, like, I always think, like, in my role, would I say or do this in front of my child? And mm-hmm. if I wouldn't, then I probably shouldn't do it. Right. And I think that you could probably apply that across the board. But I think we've lost that somewhere along the way, really. But she's a good reminder of not only like we should be examples for our kids in what we say and do, but also a reminder of like what's really important. Yeah.
Kind of keeps you grounded.
Yeah. Oh, she will do that. Yes, she will.
She's darling. I've seen your photo. She's adorable.
Thank you. Her teacher sent me a picture this morning. She's the teaching assistant in class. Ooh. And so she sent me a picture of her and I was like, I texted her teacher back and I said, I can just see the look in her eye and she has too much power right now. Like I can see it. So
maybe she's got a future too. Maybe. Leading the state of Kentucky.
We love seeing young leaders.
Yeah.
When I was doing some research, I learned you have this wonderful, like blended modern family. Tell us about that.
Oh yes. We are about as blended as we can be. So, my husband, Chris, and I met because we were both teachers and basketball coaches. So he was coaching the boys team at East Jessamine High School, and I was coaching the girls team. And people always think that's cute, and it's not. Because all it means is that you fight over gym time, right? And so when we got married, he was a package deal. I got Will and Nate with him. And so I have two bonus sons. And then not long after that, actually one of my basketball players became a part of our family and we adopted Emma. And so we had those three for a while until then I had Evelyn. Mm-hmm. And so the age range though is wild. So yeah. Emma is 28.
Wow.
And when I tell people I have a 28-year-old, they kind of look at me sideways and I'm like, no, I didn't have her. I acquired her. Mm-hmm. And then, Will and Nate are 24 and 22 and then Evelyn's 5.
Okay.
So there's a huge gap there, but it's, you know, adopted, you know, I call the boys my bonus sons and then biological and we're all just one big family.
How fun to have all those different perspectives in your family.
Yes.
That's really cool.
It's almost like Evelyn has like 5 parents, you know.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
How has adoption changed your life?
Oh my gosh. It's one of the best things that I mm-hmm. ever did. I always had a heart for it before. And actually Chris and I had started an adoption process when we got married. Mm-hmm. Then Emma moved in with us. And so we kind of put it on the shelf for a little bit. And then I realized like, maybe this is our adoption, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, she actually lived with us. She moved in with us when she was a freshman in high school and we did not make the adoption official until her senior year of college. Mm-hmm. And I had just kind of always thought like, you're a part of our family and it is what it is. And we don't need to do anything to make it official unless you want to. And she did. And so, when we did it, she actually surprised me and she changed her last name. I didn't know she was going to do that. And so she's now, Emma Coleman O'Brien. Yeah. And then Evelyn is Evelyn Coleman O'Brien. And so, the guys on our detail have nicknamed them Echo 1 and Echo 2, which I think is hilarious.
That is funny.
Yeah.
Oh, what was that like when she told you that she was going to change her name?
It was like, I mean, listen, when you take in a 14-year-old redheaded teenage girl and you've never had, you know, a child before and you don't know what you're doing, we had some hard times along the way. And so when she came around and said she wanted to do that and change her name, I was just like, oh my gosh, it's all worth it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just very sweet of her to do that.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I know not every educator is out there adopting, you know, a student or a player, but I think it does go to show that our educators have such a heart for kids and making sure that they're in a loving home. Can you just speak to how maybe teaching doesn't stop, you know, when that last bell rings, right?
No. And that's the thing is like this is not a job you clock in and clock out of, right? Like you carry it with you. You think about it all the time. You're either wrapping up the day or you're preparing for the next one. And, you know, kids are in your room all the time. They're in there before school and after school. And especially when you're a coach, you have kind of like a different level of, relationships with students because it's outside of school. Being a teacher was one of the, it was something I was meant to do. And I felt every year like I could have, I was like kind of reflected on the year and thought, gosh, I wasn't really good enough. I need to be better next year. And then I would feel like I was doing better. And then the next year I'd be like, gosh, I wasn't really good. And I could, so it's always like the goalpost is always moving and you never feel like you're good enough, but you're always getting better is the goal. And so, I always say, I want to go back to my first year students and just say, I'm so sorry. You know, I was new, I was trying and I wasn't as good as I should have been, but I tried to be better every year. And that's the nature of being a teacher.
Yeah. We're all learning as we go along.
That's right.
Yes. Yes, we are.
Well, you know, you talk about jobs that you never turn off. You're a working mom. So many working moms out there, working parents in general. What do you think the state of Kentucky can do better to support working moms?
So much. There's just so many barriers out there that exist. And it's one of those things where if we keep doing what we've always done, we're just going to get what we've always gotten. And so if we want to improve, you know, workforce, participation rates, if we want to improve cultures of workplaces and family life, then we've got to think differently. And so one of the things that I have pushed for since we got elected was pre-K for all. And, so we're working on that for pre-K for all 4-year-olds in Kentucky. I actually was able to, push to make sure that we got, paid family leave in the executive branch for the first time. And, you know, when I'm talking to the governor about these things, I'm like, listen, like if we need the private sector to do these things, then we got to put our money where our mouth is too. And so, we got paid family leave. We're working on childcare for executive branch employees and are very excited about, you know, some potentials that are upcoming there. And so just making it to where people can go to work and not worry about where their kids are or what they're doing. They know they're safe and taken care of. And like, that might seem like such a small thing, but you can put people's mind at ease and you can improve worker productivity at the same time because things are being taken care of. So those are all things that I'm trying to work towards in the executive branch or that we've gotten done already that we also want to then push our private sector to either do it themselves or help us with it as well. Mm-hmm. So I think pre-K for all is going to take a combination of public and private sector coming together, but it's something we've got to get done. Like I think about the kids in Evelyn's class, like she's in kindergarten and I look at her classroom and I just know by the statistics that more than half of those kids walk through the door and they're not ready. And so we've got to do something about that.
Yeah. On the topic of issues, is there another, maybe a different issue that Kentucky faces that you think deserves more national attention?
So I will tell you this. I think one of the big challenges that we're seeing now is there's a lot of issues going on with the federal government and internationally with tariffs and with, you know, all of those things. Most people don't realize, and I grew up on a farm in Mercer County, but most people don't realize how high the suicide rate is for farmers. Hmm. It's a demographic that is higher than normal. And, when you think about it, they're running a small business because every farm is a small business. They probably can't make ends meet with that alone. So they also have a whole nother career and job that they're working on. And so one of the issues that, you know, with the tariffs, with the soybean issues that we're hearing about, all of the things that are happening around agriculture, I'm actually really concerned about farmers' mental health. And so, that's something that I think we need to lift up a little bit more, obviously in a very agricultural, dependent state, but across the country as well, because these are real issues that sometimes, you know, if you have to sell your family farm or, you know, you're not going to be able to make ends meet, that changes the dynamic of your family. And so it's something I think we've got to be aware of and we've got to be better at providing supports for. Yeah.
And we know in Kentucky, I mean, the weather alone is a massive impact on farmers and the year that we've had.
Yeah.
Wow. Like the pendulum of weather.
Right. And just like all of the things that our agricultural community has to deal with that they can't control is hard enough. And so when you throw more and more at them, you know, it just, we have an aging farming population. Mm-hmm. It's harder and harder for young people to get involved because I don't know how people afford to farm anymore, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. And then, the farmland is shrinking. And so, that's a workforce issue. And we don't always think about it like that because you think a lot of times when we think of workforce, we think of like college degrees and, you know, maybe manufacturing plants and things like that. But it's agriculture too. Yeah.
Well, it's something probably that a lot of us, I didn't grow up on a farm, but in a rural community, but you don't always think that's where your food comes from, right? Without farmers, mm-hmm. we're not eating. So.
Right. Right.
Got to support them.
Yeah. And, we have great programs at the, in Kentucky's high schools and colleges and even some middle schools like FFA mm-hmm. and, 4-H and things like that. But I actually worked, with our ag commissioner, Jonathan Schell. And it's always funny when people see us together because they're like, you guys are not alike at all. and we're not, we come from two different parties.
I know you've interviewed him a few times.
Yeah. But when it comes to ag education, we are, I mean, on the same page about it because we both know how important it is. And so we work together to create, All In for Ag, mm-hmm. All In for Ag Education Week in Kentucky to get into our elementary schools and to get kids to exactly mm-hmm. what you said. They need to know where their food comes from. Mm-hmm. They need to understand it a little bit better. And so just that creating awareness around it. And I always say, you know, for every challenge we face, education is the solution. And that's true with ag education as well. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah. Just curiosity, what kind of farm did you grow up on?
We had horses and cattle, and we actually leased out part of it for tobacco a long time ago, too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned working closely with Commissioner Schell. You also, of course, work closely with the governor. Uh-huh. Is there anything that has surprised you with over the past few years working with him?
The truth is, Andy is really funny. You know, he's very serious mm-hmm. on his, you know, he's obviously a great leader and he's done a great job getting us through some really tough times. So none of those things, you know, there's no room for humor there, but, there are times where he's so funny about things sometimes behind the scenes. And, I think a lot of people may not see that part of him, but yeah, he's a funny guy.
I have a confession about Governor Beshear. This is from me and Larry, my co-anchor. Okay. So when Governor Beshear dressed up like Mr. Rogers before Halloween, that his Team Kentucky update that particular day was our lead story at 5 o'clock. And Larry and I had been running around. We didn't know that he was dressed up and we weren't even thinking that Halloween.
Yeah.
And so Carolina Buchek, our political reporter, pops up and makes no mention of it, you know, mm-hmm. because it wasn't about that. And there's Governor Beshear in this, I mean, just really bad red sweater. And Larry and I looked at each other and we were like, oh my gosh. Because yeah, we're chatting while the package is clanging. Right. And we said, who let him wear that today?
Right.
We figured it out shortly after.
But, not his usual style.
No.
That is hilarious. I actually think he would be very proud that like people did not know he was. Yes, he did.
Yeah. And then the little video that came out after the fact, we were like, okay, it all makes sense now. But yeah, Larry and I were on high alert. Like, whoa, whoever his stylist is, I don't know.
Right. Right.
You know, you mentioned, this is a little more serious, but you mentioned the challenges that you'll have dealt with. Natural disasters. I can't think of another state that has almost experienced as many natural disasters in the time that I've been here in Kentucky, 5 years. What is it like for you all on a personal level when obviously, you know, there are people who have experienced these things and it's hard to even fathom what they're dealing with. But what is it like when you go to a place that has just been devastated for you all to deal with that and meet with people and see people? Does that take a toll on you personally?
It does, but I think it has to mm-hmm. because, you know, our thing in it, this is how we've always been from the beginning is we show up, you know, neither one of us have ever claimed to have all the answers. Mm-hmm. Neither one of us have ever claimed that we know how to solve every problem. But, you know, what we try to do is show up and listen and put yourself in that person's shoes, which makes it gut-wrenching sometimes. But it also is what humanizes the situation. And it, again, instead of it being a statistic or a spreadsheet, mm-hmm. I can tell you that family's name. I can tell you their story and what happened to them. And I, you know, look at these parents, especially like with kids, like Evelyn's age when she was, you know, maybe two when the tornadoes and the floods happened. And you see those families, they've lost everything and they're moving into a travel trailer, which, you know, we provided those and most states don't. And so everyone was just happy to have somewhere to go. But then you think their entire home is gone and they're moving into this little place and they're trying to figure out like, where are their where are the papers that they need? How do they begin to like navigate the FEMA process, and what do they do for work? And so like all of those things, if you've got to put yourself in it, or you're too far removed, mm-hmm. in my opinion. And so when we go, it's hard. It's hard mm-hmm. to see people going through those things. I think about being in Wolf County at the shelters mm-hmm. that people in Wolf County didn't get hit by the floods the way that Breathitt County did, mm-hmm. but they opened all of their gyms in the school system and let people move in and stay there as like a shelter. And so I just go around and talk to people, and you know, sometimes they're like, they're almost embarrassed, and I'm like, you didn't do anything wrong. You know, this could have happened to anybody. And so to sit there and listen to them, and some of them have their animals with them, some of them have babies, and I'll, pet the animals, hold the babies, just listen, give the moms a break, mm-hmm. For a minute. And that's all so important, because it really helps you to understand, not just like from a policy level of, you know, the things that you need to get done, but you also need to understand how it makes families feel. And when you personalize it in that way, I think you're able to better serve people. And even though it's hard, and it would be easier just to stay away mm-hmm. and send resources in, I think there's something about it that you have to put yourself in the middle of it to truly understand it.
Yeah. After you have those days when you're kind of on the ground meeting those families, what is the work like once you get back to the Capitol and are working on emergency funding and all of those things?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that we actually were able to get done because of all of this. So I go to Jackson, and the Lexington Fire Department is like command central. They're the ones that have set up and are helping, you know, in all of the areas. And so they start pointing out to me that, okay, well, here's West Virginia's team and here's Tennessee's team and here's Indiana's team. And I'm like, what are you talking about teams? And they said, well, every state around us has an urban search and rescue team. They call them USAR teams, mm-hmm. except for us. And I'm like, well, why don't we have one? You know? Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, come sit down and we'll tell you all about it. They had been trying to get a USAR team passed in Kentucky since after the tornado in West Liberty in 2011.
Wow.
And they were like, we can't even get the bill heard. Like, no one will even hear it to mm-hmm. even vote it up or down. And I'm like, we're going to fix this, because we were just coming off of the tornadoes and now the flood. And we have a great guard, KSP, first responders. They're amazing. But they were kind of operating in their own little places and doing the best they could without any kind of coordination, support, resources mm-hmm. that every other state around us had. We were like one of seven states that didn't have a USAR team. And I'm like, okay, now is the time, you know? And so I worked with the first responders here in Lexington. They handled some of the legislative side, and I worked with Kentucky Emergency Management, the governor's office, and we got that bill passed in both chambers unanimously, and the governor signed it into law. So something that they'd been trying to get done for over a decade and couldn't even get a vote on it, passed unanimously in both chambers and was signed into law. So now we have an organized response that is faster, more efficient, better resource than it was before. So when the next, you know, natural disaster hits, we're going to be a little bit better than we were the last time and a little bit better than we were the last time. And so those are the kind of things that when you learn about, like, well, why does Kentucky not have this mm-hmm. and everyone else
does? You wouldn't even realize that it doesn't have.
No.
Yeah.
And so I just decided, like, okay, we're going to do something about that. And so we were able to get it done.
Yeah. Going back to other issues and kind of your to-do list, do you feel like you still have unfinished business in Frankfort?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't know that you ever really feel like you get the things yeah. done that you want to get done. But I want to see the child care through for our state employees, and we're working on that. Pre-K for all 4-year-olds is huge, and it would change the trajectory of a generation of kids and their futures. But it also would provide so much relief to working moms and, you know, and businesses who need workers right now. So those two things, I think are really important, to make sure that we get those done. We also have a lot of economic development announcements and jobs and all of those things that we want to make sure that we put a bow on all of it before we leave and get it done so that there's no holdup. Once we leave office, we want to make sure we finish what we started, is what I like to say.
Yeah. I saw a very interesting headline this week. It said, starting in 2026, 14 states will have female governors. You might have seen that same headline from NBC. What would it take for you to consider running for governor?
Well, I am. I'm giving it some serious consideration here in Kentucky. And it's interesting that I know Abigail Spanberger in Virginia mm-hmm. and Mikey Sherrill in New Jersey. I've had the privilege of getting to know them and calling them friends. And so watching their move from Congress to the governor's office was a really cool thing to see. And in the same week that our country elected a record number of female governors mm-hmm. on both sides of the aisle, Kentucky laid to rest our only female governor mm-hmm. so far with Martha Lane Collins, who was also a teacher. Mm-hmm. And so it was almost like a full circle moment. And while I thought, this is a hero that blazed trails and this is a well-deserved rest for her, I just keep thinking there's a whole lot more work to be done. And so, I'm going to keep thinking about it, talking to folks about it. I've had a lot of conversations with people across Kentucky about it, just looking for, what do we need in a leader? What do we need to keep mm-hmm. the good things going? And where we're not hitting all of our marks, what do we need to do differently? And I think that legacy is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some of the things that people are telling you that they want to see in a leader, or some of the things they would want to see you tackle if you were in that role?
Yeah, well, everybody wants to make sure that their school is the best, right? Mm-hmm. And gets better at every turn. And I always say the future of Kentucky's economy is in our classrooms today. And so even if you don't think about it from an education perspective, you got to think about it from an economic one, because that's our driver. I hear from people all the time that they want to keep the good economic development and job creation going. And they also want to keep, Andy and I have really made a conscious effort to keep Washington DC out of Kentucky, in terms of like the rhetoric and the culture war stuff that you hear on the news all the time, that it might be, great to talk about on TV, but in reality, normal people aren't thinking about those things or worried mm-hmm. about those things. They're thinking about, their kids' schools and the roads and their safety and things like that. And so, making sure that we keep it to where Kentucky is focused on Kentucky and we don't let all of the other stuff that goes on elsewhere distract us is something that people actually have really liked, because it's exhausting. That other stuff is just exhausting to constantly have to worry about whatever culture war of the day is on cable news. And so I've heard from a lot of people, I really like that you guys don't get involved in that. So that's fine with me, because I think it's exhausting, and I think it's the teacher and the coach in me that I just don't have time for the nonsense.
Sure.
Like, we have a job to get done. So that's how I focus on it too.
What do you hope your legacy is? That part of what you hope your legacy is in Frankfort?
Yeah. I mean, that would be nice if people could look back and say, the Bashir Coleman administration went to work every day. They showed up for people. They focused on the things that we're worried about, and they didn't drag us through, the national mud. That would be fine with me if that's the legacy that we leave behind. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is there something that people would be surprised to learn about you outside of politics?
Oh, I am a little obsessed with Christmas.
Well, how to segue.
I appreciate that. What do you love about Christmas?
So I really didn't get into it a lot, like growing up, but when I got my own house and my own family, I was like, we're going to do this big. So I may or may not have 4 Christmas trees.
Oh, okay.
And then I decorate the one in our office. I won't let anyone else do it. It's like those clips where the mom is like, why is no one helping me? And then someone tries to put an ornament on and you're like wrong place.
Smack their hand away.
So, that's not my vision.
I know. So the governor's mansion staff will come in sometimes to our offices. Mm-hmm. And so they saw the tree and they're like, who did this? And my office folks were like, the lieutenant governor. And they were like, can she come help us decorate the mansion? I was like, I don't think you know how much I would love to do that. So we have all those things. I just love making it feel like Christmas. And I used to be a very hardcore wait till the day after Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And then I realized it makes me happy. And so I'm just doing it. So I do it at the beginning of November.
Hey,
Yeah.
Wow.
No rules.
I love that.
I respect that.
Yeah.
Having a 5-year old, what's that like around the holidays?
Well, she's so into it. Like okay. We have an elf.
Is that the elf on the shelf
thing? Oh, yeah. Yep. Not my decision. And also not my responsibility.
Sure.
I was like, I do everything else with Christmas. Chris can move the elf. So, she gets into that and she talks about Christmas all year long. Like she'll listen to Christmas music in the summer. And so Chris is like, you have created a little Christmas monster. And I'm like, I really have. Yeah. So now she's into like timelines. So she's trying to figure out like, how many days until this? How many weeks until this? And I have totally thrown her off by decorating, you know, early because she thinks Christmas is like next week. And I'm like, no, that's Thanksgiving. She's like, well, when's Christmas? And I'm like, it's coming. It's coming.
Keeping her on her toes.
Yeah.
Never know when Christmas is going to be here. Do you have a favorite Kentucky Christmas tradition?
I really like, going to see like the different So like, the Southern Lights.
Oh, yeah.
At the horse park.
Mm-hmm.
We like to do that. We like to go there. Sometimes there's houses that are like in our neighborhood. The neighborhood we live in now, they have a competition and they're serious about it. So like so many of the houses in our neighborhood decorate. And since Evelyn could like tell us what she wanted to do, every night in like from Thanksgiving to Christmas, we go drive the neighborhood. And, you know, so she knows even in like the summer, she'll say, well, that's the house with the Grinch and that's the house with Mickey Mouse and that's the house with Elsa or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we drive the neighborhood every single night and, we look at as the lights go up and as people start to decorate and she remembers them all year long. So that's what we do literally every night.
I love that. I might have to start doing that. There are some good houses in Lexington.
Yeah.
Since you do have kids of all different ages, what does Christmas morning look like for you guys? I mean, is your 5-year-old waking up at 5 a.m. or are the older kids sleeping in? Like, what's it like?
Yes and yes. So Evelyn, we have to make sure that she doesn't go downstairs without us, obviously. But we actually send her to wake up all the big kids. And I'm like, you can't go downstairs until everybody's awake. So she's just jumping on them and, you know, like, get up, Santa came. And they actually really like, I mean, like, they probably wouldn't get up early if it weren't for her. So they love to come down and watch her just get so excited about everything too. So
love it. It's so fun being with kids around the holidays.
It is.
It really adds an element of chaos that I think is kind of needed.
That's a great way to say that.
Yeah. It is the holiday season. This episode will be coming out right at the start of December, but it's, you know, a time when people are thinking of what they have, what they're grateful for. What does that mean for you?
Yeah, I'm really grateful, for, honestly, the goodness that I get to see every day from the people in Kentucky. You know, we just did our Salvation Army Red Kettle kickoff. And the Angel Tree, we have one of those at our church. And I actually was able to thank the Salvation Army for giving us an opportunity to help. Cause sometimes people will say like, I just want to help, but I don't know how. Right. So I thank them for giving us an opportunity to help, but also to give us the opportunity to teach our kids how to help. So trying to explain to Evelyn, like why that person is ringing the bell when we go to Kroger and explaining to her why we got an angel off the tree at church and helping her to understand like some kids don't have a lot of things for Christmas. And so we're going to help them. We're going to help get some presents for some kids and for her to get excited about getting things for other people and for helping someone that she'll never meet, is one of my favorite things to do now. But the opportunities that we've been given to get to know people in Kentucky, the things I've learned from them, it's just been something that I think about how lucky I am every day that I get to do it. And it's never left me. And I don't think it ever will because it's just something I really enjoy.
Yeah. Well, that puts a nice Christmas bow.
It kind of does.
On our conversation.
It really does.
Before we let you go, we know you're very busy. We want to do a few quick hot takes for you. Oh, quick question.
Okay.
They're not too crazy, so don't worry. Okay. First one. Underrated Kentucky town.
Oh, underrated Kentucky town.
This is a hard one, I think.
It is. You know, I just went to Millersburg. in Bourbon County.
They're very festive there.
Very festive. And they have a whole Main Street program. They're trying to, because they had that fire not, a while ago. And so they're really trying to get everything back up and going. And it is a cute little town. And they, I can tell, like, they are working really hard to get it back to where they want it to be. And so, like, that's a good one. And that's one that I actually had not been to before.
Really?
Obviously,
yeah.
I've been to, like, Paris and Bourbon County, but not Millersburg.
Okay.
Millersburg. Yeah. Right. Put that on the list.
Yeah.
Who would play you in a movie about your life in politics?
Oh.
And Evie has already answered this question for you.
Yeah, so I'm really picked one yesterday. So maybe after you say yours, I'll say what I said.
Okay. So I hear just from, like, looking like me, there are two actresses that people always tell me look like me. One is the woman on The Blacklist.
Oh, I don't know who is that.
I can't think of her name, but if you watch The Blacklist,
that woman, okay.
And the other one is Olivia Wilde.
Oh, that's yeah. I can see that.
But from, I would say, I guess one of those two just because they look like me, but from an attitude perspective, it would be like a, I don't know, like a, maybe like a Sandra Bullock. Right.
That's a good one too.
I said
Julia Roberts.
Oh, that's my God. Who I thought maybe.
Wow.
Yes. This was discussion in the newsroom.
Yes. Who would play you in a movie?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That's great. Couple more holiday questions. Hallmark movies or no?
No.
Really?
Mm-mm. I don't do Hallmark movies. Mm-mm. I do like, I have a favorite though. We watch it every year. It's called Four Christmases.
Oh, so good.
And
I don't think I've seen that one.
Oh, you got to. It's like
Vince Vaughn and Reese Witherspoon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's very cute. Both of their parents are divorced. Yeah. And so that's what the Four Christmases. But it's a funny, especially like anytime you have like dysfunction in the family, you see it in that movie and you're like, okay, so I'm not the only one.
Right. Yeah. You're not alone.
Right.
Okay. This is, we already asked you Christmas tradition, but what's your favorite Kentucky tradition in general?
Oh gosh, my favorite. Well, it would have to be the Derby because Chris and I got engaged on Derby Day at Keeneland and then we got married the next Derby Day. And we timed it so that our reception would be a derby party. So we watched the derby. We got married. We had a horse barn and that's where we got married. And had our reception. And so my dad to this day will say something very sarcastic like on Derby Day, like, oh, well, there's nothing else to do in Kentucky on Derby Day. So let's get married, you know, but it was the best. It was a very Kentucky.
Totally.
Like, experience. And so I'm glad that we did it that way.
Yeah.
Oh,
very cool.
Yeah.
That is very Kentucky.
Yeah.
Lieutenant Governor, any final thoughts or any message to the folks who are going to listen or watch this?
Well, I would just say, if you're out there listening and you're able, you know, go to your local Kroger or, maybe I think they have angel trees at the mall and at, you know, in churches and things like that. And just, if you could help one person, you know, get a meal for them at Kroger or, you know, buy some gifts for some kids that need it, take a little time to do that because it may feel like the need is so big that you don't know where to start. But if everybody did just a little something, it would have a huge impact. And so I hope as folks are listening, they remember to help some other folks during the holiday season especially. So
okay. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here.
All.
We enjoyed it.
This was awesome. We've leveled up on Hot Mic. I can't wait to recap this.
Yeah.
This is going to be good. Lieutenant Governor, thank you so much for taking the time. It was so nice to get to know you a little better and learn more about who Jacqueline Coleman is.
Thank you.
So thank you for coming on. To our listeners and our viewers, thank you so much. And we will see you on next week's episode of Hot Mic.